Hi, I'm Kelsey Farias.
And I'm Armando Farias.
And each week we will be sharing knowledge and inspiration on becoming a better you.
Feeling down, defeated, or looking at how to better yourself? We got you.
Already successful? Great. Let's help you achieve even more.
Sit back and get prepared to hear about overcoming challenges related to self-development, such as mental health, relationships, goal setting, personal growth, fitness, and dream building.
Welcome to Self-Love Sit-Downs.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Self-Love Sit-Downs. Today's special guest comes to us from Canada. She's an instructor at the University of Regina. She's also the director of human resources in the public sector. She holds a plethora of degrees, and to name a few, she has a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology, a Bachelor of Human Justice. She has a Master's of Art in Interdisciplinary and a Master in Human Resource Management. Please welcome Loretta Gerlach.
All right. Welcome, everybody. It is a pleasure to have Loretta Gerlach. This is something that's been in the making for, gosh, months now. We've had this on the schedule for a while, and I am super excited to have her here because she is a wealth of knowledge. She's going to drop so much value for everybody, and maybe we're all going to be able to discover something special about ourselves that we can apply in our lives. So thank you, Loretta, for joining us on this episode.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I'm a big fan of the podcast. Yes. So it's a bit nerve-wracking to be on a podcast that you listen to every week. Like, that's scary.
We appreciate it. Yeah. And just to give a little backstory, the way that we met Loretta was through Kelsey. She actually signed up with coaching with Kelsey over a year ago now.
Over a year.
Yeah.
And it's not only been a coaching client relationship, but it's turned into a friendship.
Oh my gosh, such a friendship.
I mean, just listening to you guys talk before we started recording, it's like you guys have known each other for so long.
Yeah, she stuck with me for life. And if the Canadian borders weren't closed, we would have seen each other by now.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Loretta's in Canada. She's our first international, international guest.
Oh, woohoo.
Yeah. And first international client as well.
Yes. Isn't it crazy how we've actually never met face to face, but yet, like, Kelsey is such an important part of my life and such a close friend now, but yet, yeah, we've never been in a room together.
I know. I talk to you more than I talk to some of my friends. We just
love it.
Relationship that is so close and connected and have never actually been in the same room together. That will change at some point, but it is crazy. The internet is such an amazing thing to connect people. That's why I say people sometimes, you know, give social media or all of this kind of a bad reputation, but I'm like, it can connect you with people all over the mm-hmm. world. How amazing is that? Because it's brought so many friendships like ours into my life that and these people are now like my family, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just think it's such an amazing thing. And I'm so grateful to have you in my life.
Right back at you, sister.
All right, we're going to jump right into this because Loretta's got so much value, it's ridiculous, and I just can't wait to hear everything that she's going to talk about and we're able to share with everybody out there. So one of the things that we're going to be talking about today is strengthening your own self-concept, and she's got a ton of bullet points, a ton of information in regards to this, and she's just going to drop the knowledge and put us all in awe with all she has to offer.
No pressure.
No pressure. So I'm just setting the stage for you. So before we started recording, we were talking about kind of identities and stuff. So as far as like understanding self-concept and why it matters, can you tell us a little bit about that and why that matters?
Yeah. So when we talk about self-concept, we're talking about that sort of essence of what do you believe? How do you evaluate yourself? You know, what is that sort of essence of your personality that, you know, has been rooted in all kinds of pieces of your personality, your identity over time? And we could ask anybody and they would tell us, oh yeah, like my self-concept is, you know, this is what I believe in. This is the kind of person I am. But a lot of times it's a bit deeper than that, right? And so there are pieces that we might have blinders to, or we don't really understand about ourselves. So the more we invest in understanding the different pieces of our self-concept, the more we empower ourselves to do better, to be motivated to meet goals, to be able to establish stronger, more authentic relationships. So there's incredible opportunity in just investing in yourself and digging a little deeper to understand not only what are my beliefs and what do I think about myself, but how did I get there and how can I continue to grow in that direction?
I think a lot of people probably haven't really sat with that and asked themselves those questions. How, basically, like how I tell people is everybody is viewing the world through their lens, and everybody's lens is a little bit different based on how you were raised, how you view the world. All of these things play into the person that you are, your confidence that you carry through the world. And it's so crazy, you know, for just an example that comes to mind is the book club. You're in the book club with me.
I'm in the book club.
You're in the book club. We all read the same book. And then we come on and we talk about it. And we all have these different ideas. We all have read this through our own lens and have a different outcome for it. And I think that's what's so amazing, because everybody's identity, everybody's, you know, kind of personality comes out in what they believe and how they came to this conclusion. And it's, you know, everybody is trying to quote unquote fit in the world, but we're not meant to fit in. Because we all have a different identity. We all have a different personality. We all have these different beliefs, not just about ourselves, but about other people, about all of this. And it's so interesting to me. I would just love to study human minds like that. You know,
yeah.
I just think that people don't really take the time to think about that kind of stuff and really think and ask themselves, what do I believe about myself? What Absolutely. Is my identity and how did I get here?
Yeah. Or they do think of that, but they think, well, that's just who I am. And so there's nothing I can do about it. Oh, and so there's so many opportunities, the more you learn, to be able to grow. And we don't take those opportunities. And, you know, I'll just tell you, I'll be very transparent. I've studied this for years, and I think I've only gotten good at sort of personal growth in the last few years, because you know, I could read words on a page and, you know, do all kinds of things to understand and study and explore this as an academic. But until you really sit, like you said, Kelsey, with yourself and start to ask some, you know, challenging questions and understand the complexity of who we all are is really where we start to see the growth.
Yeah. I think too, this just comes to mind for me because the more, how you said, only in the last few years, because really you can read things, you can educate yourself on items, but actually executing on them is a whole nother thing. That's a whole different level. And as I've learned things over the last handful of years or so, that's really where I've dug into my personal development and education and everything. And with yourself being so overqualified in the world, I'm just going to your horn. Don't you feel the more that I've learned, the more I realize there's so much more for me to learn?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Feel as though, you know, and I hate to say it this way, but the more I've learned, the dumber I realize I really am, because there's so much more that I don't know. So I really kind of feel like, okay, I don't really understand all of this. So I try to like, okay, I'm just going to stay humble and open to everything, because there's so much to learn. There's no possible way to learn everything. And it's absolutely so humbling. I figured you would feel the same way with all of your education and everything.
Yeah. Oh. Well, and that's a great example, because part of my very personality, though, is I love to learn. Mm-hmm. And so I know that about myself. And I'll actually link it back to something about Kelsey. So for those people who are coached by Kelsey, Kelsey helps you with things like strength training is one of the many, 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 many things she supports you in. So Kelsey will program my strength training every, I don't know, what is it, Kelsey, five-ish weeks, right? Where you'll give me a new program. And so I love to learn. So when that happens, I have a spike in joy, a spike in productivity in terms of my performance. I'm excited to learn new things and to push for new PRs. And I love those moments. It's my favorite part of the cycle of working with Kelsey is when the program changes. But there might be other people on Kelsey's team who seek comfort inconsistency. Mm-hmm. And that might be a rough week for someone else.
Exactly.
But the more you know about that, the more you can manage. So yes. I know this about myself. So then I have to push myself harder in week 4 and 5, mm-hmm. right? To make sure that I'm still delivering, and then look forward to the next change, right? Where yes. someone else might have to push in week 1. But if you know it, you can manage around it.
Yeah. I think that's such a great example mm-hmm. because that's really relatable. People like that comfort where you thrive mm-hmm. in the new. You thrive in a challenge. You thrive in change. And some people might not relate to that. And that is just like such a big piece of, I think that's even, I mean, kind of tying it back to like today's world with COVID and everything. People are having a hard time with change. Our world completely got flipped upside down and people are handling it so differently. Some people are hanging on to the comfort that the world is going to go back to how it was. And some people are like, hey, no, we're just rolling with the punches, you know, kind of taking it as it is. And people are struggling in different areas of the world with their mindset, with the world changing. And it's hard, but it's hard at different points for people right now.
Absolutely.
And so that comes down to your identity. You know, how do you do with change?
So you know what else that deals with? Is something we call self-verification as well. Because when we get comfortable in this is who I am, this is my self-esteem, this is how I feel about what I can do, what I can't do, what I like, what I don't like, that kind of thing, we then engage in this process of self-verification where we're always scanning the world around us mm-hmm. for some kind of proof that we're right, mm-hmm. right? So for example, if I say, well, I can't lift heavy things, mm-hmm. and I try to bench press 100 pounds and I can't do it, then I'm like, see, told you I can't do it. Yep. Right. And so then we look and as you say, the pandemic gave people lots of examples of that, right? It gave them like, see, this is, I can't work from home. I can't mm-hmm. go to the gym. I can't figure out an alternative to, you know, be healthy because my gym is closed or whatever the case is, instead of looking for that opportunity to push ourselves out. Exactly. So if we can be aware of where we're also telling her, and it's that story we tell each other, you've talked about this on the podcast before, it's all the story you tell yourself. It's the self-talk mm-hmm. in your head, you know, but maybe just pause that voice in your head and say, was that really true? Or is there another opportunity yeah, right. here, right? Instead of just getting really comfortable all the time in that one place.
I do have to say, this is something I've really had to work on, because you will find whatever you're searching for is, you know, kind of what you're saying in a roundabout way. And with my education, with learning, trying to grow as a coach, I have to be so open-minded to everything, because I'll find whatever I'm searching for. If I already have a decision made, like, oh, this is the answer, I will find studies and research that support that. I have to keep an open mind to both sides. And I'll have to say that's a challenge. It's mm-hmm. challenging to challenge your own, you know, ideas.
Your own beliefs.
Yeah, your own beliefs. And that's something I have to be very, very aware of. You know,
yeah.
I think it's so interesting though. Something that I have done a lot of research on is the placebo effect. The mm-hmm. whole idea of whatever I tell myself is what will happen. And this kind of ties to like the law of attraction, manifestation, all of this woo-woo mindset stuff is all tied together. Our mind is such a powerful thing. And I think people really take it for granted. People don't understand what their mind is capable of doing for them to help them. You know,
and
people don't allow that.
There's a spectrum there that is really important. So maybe let's say you are working with someone and they don't support the idea of manifestation. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay. I guess you don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. But don't underestimate just that day-to-day power of the voice in your head, right? Mm-hmm. The stories we tell each other, because that was stories that we tell ourselves, because that still has power, like you talked about. And that's my whole argument today, is if we understand the power that we have within us, we can harness that power for so many opportunities and so many ways that we can excel in our goals and just, you know what, make ourselves happier, right? Yeah. If for no other reason than the story you tell yourself in your head makes you happier today than you were yesterday, hey, that's a huge win, right?
It is. And I feel like people don't take advantage of that. It's like, what makes you happy? What are you going to do to make yourself a happier person? We all want more happiness, but people aren't willing to accept or do a little bit of the work to accept, I am in control of my happiness.
You know, that is such a great point. And it actually was one of the points I wanted to raise with you. When I work with, you know, students who are graduating university and looking for jobs for the first time, the number one thing that I tell my students that they need to study and learn and sort of master, if you will, is something called their locus of control. And I suspect this will resonate with a lot of your listeners, even if they've never heard those words before. It's kind of common sense and we just use a different label for it. But locus of control is exactly what you're talking about there, Kelsey, where it's how we look at the world around us and then make determinations about our influence over that. So if you have an external locus of control, it means you're someone who's giving that sort of credit for the things that happen to you outside. Maybe it's luck, or maybe it's fate, or just other people, you know, did things to you. Mm-hmm. Where an internal locus of control is where you're looking at your ownership of your success and your ability to influence that success. So I'll give you an example. Let's say I had a job a few years back, quite a few years ago, and I had a boss that wasn't very nice, right? My boss was really difficult, like gossiped about people, made up stories, was kind of a bully, that sort of experience. Someone with an external locus of control is going to say, you know what? Poor me. I have this terrible boss. It's a horrible opportunity. There's only so much I can do in life when you have such a monster of a boss. That's an external locus of control. But someone with an internal locus of control is going to say, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for me to understand how to deal with difficult people. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity for me in my leadership journey to understand how someone with negative behaviors can influence the motivation of others, right? You have a great opportunity. And so often we are faced with difficult circumstances that are seemingly beyond our control. And then we just say, well, what could I do? This is terrible, right? I'm stuck. There's, you know, this bad thing has happened to me. Where if we can work on shifting our internal locus of control, then we move to a mindset of continuous growth, a mindset of opportunity all the time. And then we can just spin that positive idea, not just to make it, you know, put a bow on it and make it happy, but to actually create opportunities that are right there in front of us that we might not have seen before.
I can relate so heavily to this because I dealt with a really difficult coworker, actually a few of them. At the beginning, I found myself being like, oh my gosh, why are they so mean to me? You know, this and that. But as time went on, my mindset really shifted to, this is everything to do with them and nothing to do with me. I have no control over how they view me. They are viewing me through their lens. After some time, they ended up dwindling out. And I was having a conversation with a boss of mine who kind of, you know, helped through that process, kept apologizing, saying, I'm so sorry. You know, our hands were tied. We could only do so much. And I said, you know what? This gave me such an opportunity to grow as a person because I really was challenged in a lot of things because I got a pretty big mouth. I'm not somebody going to just sit and take a beating so much. And I sat and I took some beatings and it was humbling for me to say, okay, you have to work on your control. You have to work on your control, because how do you want to be seen in this situation? How do you want to handle this? How can you respectively make it through this without becoming also the villain? And it really taught me so, so much. But I did make a complete shift through that process from the victim to, you know what, I'm learning and I'm growing in this situation. It's a really shitty situation, but I handled it really well. And now I'm proud of myself. And now I know that I'm capable. I'm no longer identifying as somebody who has more control, I guess, in a sense, because before I would have popped off. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of went through what you're talking about. Yeah. I feel like I really made that mindset transition through that process. And that's hard. It's really, you know, I think people really fall into the external, you know, because I think it's hard for us not to play the victim.
Yeah. And there are lots of examples, even in, if you think about things that Self-Love Sit Downs talks about, you know, in terms of finances, right? I grew up, I think, Kelsey, you might identify a bit with this as well. Like, I didn't grow up with a lot of money. So I would have come from, you know, definitely like a working class background. So, you know, it would have been really easy to fall into I can't get an education, or I can't, you know, break out of that working class background, because that's who I am. And that's what I saw and what I was taught all the time. And so you have to, you know, and I looked around, and a lot of the people I went to, say, high school with, you know, their parents paid for their university education, and they went full time and finished in 4 years. Well, you know what? I never went to university once in my whole life full time, but I've managed to get a few degrees and get a couple of good jobs based on those degrees, right? Yeah. But I picked away at it piece by piece because I looked at it as another alternative. You know, same thing with, so I work with Kelsey, and I'm 53 years old, and, you know, it would have been really easy to say, well, I can't work with this super uber young, cool, hip coach who has a team of other super young, cool,
I'm hip. Cool and hip.
Yeah. You know, with a team of other young, like, you know, clients and that are hip, it would have been really easy to just say, well, that's beyond my control, right? Because I'm different from them. Or, you know what, I can step up the game, right? And I can be like, how can I keep up with the team? And how can I, you know, change my behaviors? And you know what, I might not be the strongest person on Kelsey's team. And I might not be the fastest loser of weight, or, you know, getting my PRs, but then I don't let that hold me back, right? I'm still going to say, at 53, what can I do? What can I learn here to do even better for myself? Right? To be able to invest in my own health. So a lot of what we're talking about in terms of, it's so easy to fall back on, this is beyond my control, fits into so many topics that you guys talk about all the time.
Oh my gosh. And I love how you were talking about being raised in a working class home. This is something I feel so strongly about. You cannot play the victim to the life that you've been handed, because we don't have control over that. You have the ability to make a change. You are choosing to make to whatever path you're going on. It would have been easier for all three of us, Armando included, because he didn't grow up in a, you know, easy, rich household either. It was destined for us to all be the middle class, working, you know, not poverty levels, but we were not destined to have a higher income, be, you know, above that class, right? But all of us chose to pave the way and make that our motivating factor, not what actually held us back. And I think people really fall into that. People are like, oh, well, this is all I've ever known. Okay, but you can't change that. You don't have that growth mindset to say, but that's not what it has to be for me. You have to make a choice, and it's the path on, you know, the path with least resistance is to just stay in that middle class, but you can choose to pave the way, because don't you want to do better? You know, we tell our kids all the time, is like, we want you to do better than us.
Yeah.
We are pushing and we're doing better than our parents and we want you to do even better than us. It's going to be hard because it's not a path that we took, but you are fully capable of just continuing to level up and pass on the legacy of growth, you know, and not play again, kind of falling back to not play the victim and just take the easy route. Right.
Well, and I love that because yes, that's very inspiring, but that you use the word push and that's the secret to a growth mindset, right? Is that it's a lot of work, right? You got to put the effort in. You got to be conscious of what are those roadblocks that you might be even putting up for yourself, right? You need to be comfortable with failure and recognize that it's not going to come the first time and we're going to make mistakes and we're going to have to try again and have setbacks and then use our internal locus of control to overcome those setbacks and be comfortable with how we're going to learn in terms of looking for those victories and how to move ahead. So yeah, it all kind of fits together as you put it that way.
I love it.
I do have a question as far, and then hopefully you can help with this. When you talk about the internal and external, do you believe it's something that's learned through life, or is it society, or is it something that you're born with? Or can you speak a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. I love that question, by the way. I think there's a couple of things that feed into that. One of them is our socialization. And so our socialization, you know, is primarily done when we're very young with our family. And our family is like whoever influenced us when we were, you know, in those sort of primary time frames of like when we become cognitive at 2 or 3, you know, to, you know, into our teens, right? Like our family becomes that, you know, primary socialization agent to a lesser degree, are the education system as well in that period. And so the messages that we get from, you know, whoever cared for us, sometimes it's parents for most people, but it might be other loved ones or grandparents or something like that, that raised us. I mean, there is some big messages that are seeded early in life that start to set that message. So if you, you know, were raised by someone who had a really external locus of control, and they were talking a lot about like, you know, how tough it is to, you know, I don't know, whether it's the economy or government or whatever that they're feeling, right? That can set easy on. But another thing is also just our personalities, right? Like how comfortable are we with, you know, being wrong? How resilient are we? And how do we handle resilience? And resilience become sort of one of the words of the pandemic, right? People have talked a lot about resilience, you know, in the last year and a half more than normal. But that is a critical piece, but we all have sort of a default resilience position. And, you know, you've all heard things about flight or fight, like that sort of comes into play there too. So there's, you know, some elements of our personality about where we're comfortable. There's elements of socialization as well. But that said, there's no reason that we can't break out of that. But one of the challenges is, I think that, you know, we talked earlier about where are we comfortable, right? And it's just so much easier to blame someone else, right? Or push that. And it might actually be someone else's fault. Like I talked about my bad boss, right? Yeah. She was a bad boss, period, full stop, right? Like that was definitely the case. So it's not that it was my fault, because it wasn't, but I wanted to look at that opportunity for growth there. And sometimes that it's just easier for us, right? Not to do the work and to say, yeah, this bad thing happened, or this bad person is in my life, or this barrier or challenge is in front of me. And then we just don't put the work in, right? Yeah. And it's just so easy. But then we don't see the success.
Exactly.
Don't put the work in. Yeah.
I do have another question. So based on your experience, you mentioned that when you have students graduate in university, this is one of the things that you talk about.
Absolutely. But
do you have students that have that external or that internal where they have it under control, or most of them already external?
I would argue to you that my experience is most of my students start out with an external locus of control, I think, because it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so I always try to use myself as an example with students. I say, let's assume I'm the worst instructor you've ever had, right? Let's just say that right now, and that I'm not very good at my job and you're not going to have a very good experience with me. So what are your options here, right? How are you going to manage, and what are the benefits to you of figuring out how to manage me as the worst instructor you've ever had, right? Well, it gives you an opportunity to learn how to manage up, to communicate your concerns. It's an opportunity to re-establish how you do your work to manage around a difficult person. And so, you know, think of it that way. And I think it is a real challenge for a lot of students. It's so easy. I got an email from a student yesterday that said, I didn't get my assignment done because I was tired and I slept all day. So you should give me an extension.
Wow.
That's like a hard no, right? Yeah. Like, no, that's not going to happen. But that I think is definitely something that students struggle with.
I think something too that I hear in this is it really forces us to work on our problem solving, especially if you have an external locus of control. You really have to work on, okay, how can I, this is going to be a problem if you're the worst instructor. So how can I handle this? And that's so valuable out in the world. This is something we work really hard with our kids on, is asking when they have a situation, okay, and how would you handle that? Instead of us just telling them, okay, you need to do this, this, and this, we ask the question, because right, as parents, we just want to solve the problem because it's faster, it's easier. But we ask our kids, okay, what are you going to do in that scenario? Forcing them to run through that problem solving and figure out, okay, and even when they mess something up, we ask, what could you have done differently in this? Because we're really trying to get them to work on their problem solving, because more and more, I swear, people don't have good problem solving. Mm-hmm. And it's so valuable out in the world, in a career, in parenting, everything. If you can foresee a problem and try to figure out a backup plan, that is going to help so much in all areas of your life. And it's just not that common, you know?
And you know that, well, first of all, on behalf of all future employers, thank you for raising your kids that way. But you know what ties all these kinds of concepts together, though, is also, we talked about at the very beginning, like knowing yourself, like that self-concept is knowing yourself. And one thing that sort of overlaps all these things we were just talking about is also understanding your core values. So we're all made up of these values and beliefs of things that we think are fundamentally true, good and bad, right? Right and wrong, that kind of thing. And there are also these places where we're very comfortable, and they do sort of drive our attitudes and our behaviors, right? So what we think about and what's important to us is what dictates what we think and how we respond. Yeah. And so when you're thinking about like problem solving or anything like that, understanding not just that there are core values that drive your behavior, but also the behaviors of others. Yeah. And I'll just link it to something we said earlier. So we talked about how I like change and I thrive in change and I like the new programs. Well, when I think about being a manager, for example, of employees, I really like innovation. It's one of my core values. I like change. I like innovation. I like to always do better. I'm always looking for that opportunity, which sounds great. Sounds a bit braggy when you put it that way, but there are some serious limitations to that. One of them is I'm not good at detail, right? Because once I've established like, oh yeah, I've learned that. Let's move on to the next thing now, right? Let's do even better when I maybe haven't cleaned up the whole thing. Let me tell you, writing a master's thesis might be the hardest thing I've ever done, because once I did the research and felt like I knew the answer, I didn't want to put the work in to write it, right? I wanted to move on to the next thing. Yep. So I thrive in that world. But if I'm working with someone who thrives in, say, respect is their core value, they're always looking in that self-verification world for people to be respectful. So if I'm like, okay, what are we going to do now? Like, let's go. Come on, let's move. Let's do next. I might not be showing them the respect that they need to be appreciated in the moment for what they contributed, or to be able to stay put for a while and breathe. And so that can create conflicts and problems that need to be solved that might not have even really been a problem. It's just that I value innovation, they value respect, and you can have a conflict in that regard. And so the more we know about our core values. I'm sure you have many, many values. I know I do, but there's always a few of them that float to the top that are the things that matter the most to us. And so there's tons of things online that you can go and test yourself to try and get a good sense and, you know, of what your core values are. And so, you know, if you understand that, again, what you understand about yourself, and that might come from the socialization we talked about, you know, from people who had incredible influence in you throughout your life, who have influenced your values, right? And they might change over time, but the more you know about that, the more you're understanding what's driving your behavior as well, right? And so that can help us understand how to push out of stuck spots.
I think this is so funny, and I'm going to tie it to like a whole nother thing. When you're talking about the change and like, you're like, oh, as soon as I know, I'm like, I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to go. Let's keep going. That also ties. I can relate with that with my Enneagram type.
Oh,
I'm an Enneagram 3. So I'm an achiever. I find my value in achieving things. If I'm not achieving things, I feel disconnected. Right. And so for me, being an achiever, I'm always looking, okay, fast paced, let's get things done. Done is better than perfect. Whereas Armando's sister, I was going to talk about you because you have a little bit of the perfectionist, but she is actually an Enneagram 1, which is the perfectionist. So if her and I tried to work on something together, done is better than perfect for me.
Yeah.
And perfection is a core value for her. That would be something I would have to be aware of working on something with her.
I love it.
That might upset her, right?
Right. And
that would be something we would have to work through. And this just comes back to having a deeper understanding of yourself and the people around you. I think it's so important to have that understanding. Just like, you know, as a client, I made all of you tell me your Enneagram. You're an Enneagram 8. I know
you sure am.
You've got a big personality. I love that. I expect that from you. I respect that of you because I know that about you. But if we don't have that understanding of people, sometimes that could cause friction in working together. And it just like all ties together in this big loop. And kind of going back to like the core values, understanding yourself, understanding the people around you. It's so important.
And if you can't know these things about people around you, like sometimes people aren't forthcoming or we don't know them well, or we have, you know, think about businesses that are dealing with clients that change all the time and you don't really know them. At the same time, though, we can anticipate, right? Mm-hmm. So we can recognize this is my core value. I don't know what someone else's is, but I have to be ready for a variety. And so a lot of times how we do that, though, the mistake we make is, well, what might I think then, right? Like, what would I want to see here? Mm-hmm. People talk about the golden rule all the time. Do unto others as you would have do unto you. Probably the worst lesson we had as children. Don't follow the golden rule. Don't do what you want to other people because they're not you.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
Do what they need of you. Right? Yeah. Like, so, you know, I talk about this when I talk to people about communicating in teams and organizations. Don't tell people what you want them to know. Tell them what they need to hear to be able to achieve your goal.
Exactly.
What would they need to hear?
That's wow. Right? Right there.
Mind blowing.
Yes.
Mind blowing. And some people might call that manipulation. That is actually...
No, we call that management communication.
Yes, I was going to say that's actually managing the people around you because everybody is looking through their lens. How can you speak to them in their specific language?
Yeah.
You know, talking before we hit record, we were talking about how Armando speaks Spanish. And if you're speaking to somebody in your language, they don't know what you're saying. They aren't going to get the same outcome, even though you're telling them, you think, oh, well, I'm telling you exactly, but they're taking that in and that's not their language. And so you're going to get a different outcome than you expected. You have to learn to speak to people in their language. And that's different for everybody. Though people will have, you know, because people will have certain core values and you can learn this about people, but you have to be very careful when you don't have a deeper understanding
exactly
of that person. But it's so valuable if you can learn to read that of people or learn to ask the right questions to kind of uncover that. It can be beneficial to you. You know what I
mean? Absolutely. And think about, like, if you don't know, like, where is there a benefit to someone else? So let's say, for example, I'm working with Kelsey. We do weekly check-ins. Let's say I can't make my check-in this week, which, by the way, I just want to brag up. I always make my check-ins, but that's okay. but let's say I can't make my check-in this week, right? I could say to Kelsey, hey, Kelsey, I'm busy. I'm not going to make my check-in this week. That's just annoying to Kelsey, right? That's disrespectful to her. So I'm telling her what I want her to know, which is I'm not going to get my check-in on time, but that's just annoying, right? That's just a challenge for her. But if I say to her, hey, Kelsey, if you could give me a couple extra days to get my check-in, I could do a better job of providing the information you need so that you can coach me this week. Now I've made it about something that is in her advantage, right? Yeah. And so I've still made my goal, which is I'm going to be late on my check-in. But rather than just saying and blurting out what I want or what I need, I've made it about our relationship, our shared exchange and added value to my problem from Kelsey's perspective, right? Yeah. And even if I don't know what her values are, which I happen to know as, you know, sort of someone who likes to achievement. She likes to get check-ins in, right? So that connects there. At the same time though, I can anticipate what might be like her perspective on this, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's so a great, that's a great way to do it, just because I know there's a lot of situations for in our relationship where I know something's going to rub her the wrong way and it's all about presentation. So mm-hmm. I have to, before I tell her, I have to kind of run it through my mind. How is she going to react with this? What's the best solution for it? And this is the way that I'm going to express it. So that way she understands there's an issue, and but it's not, she's not feeling attacked with it. More
right.
So what can we do together to fix this issue? And, mm-hmm. and that's something that I've had to learn with her, because in the beginning of our relationship, I would just tell her like, hey, this is the problem. And she would get super defensive.
Yeah.
So I learned to read mm-hmm. her and understand her and present it in a way that benefits both of us.
I love that. I am 5 feet tall and my partner is 6'3".
Oh, wow.
And so many times I depend on him to do simple things in our home. Like, for example, change light bulbs in we have a sunken laundry room, believe it or not. And so I can't, even with a ladder, I can't reach it. And I can get crazy upset right away if that light bulb doesn't get changed. But it's not about the light bulb. It's my frustration because I'm very independent and I like to do everything by myself. I like to have some control over my own. And so if he doesn't do it right when I want him to, I get really frustrated. But it's not about the light bulb. It's uh-huh. about this lack of control that I have, right? And so he knows that about me and can manage around my behavior. Yeah.
It's so valuable to have that understanding. I really think, though, it's a really strong thing in our relationship that we have taken the time to get such a deep understanding of each other that we've learned to communicate better with each other, because it's different. I'm going to communicate different with him than you, or than with Isaiah, than with Logan. You know, even going to both of our kids, we have to speak very differently to each of them, because they have such different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But it truly is so valuable in our relationship that we've learned to communicate and speak each other's language, because it avoids all of the unnecessary conflict if we were just like, oh, here, this is what it is, like, fix it. It's like we come to each other in the approach of, hey, can we do this together, versus I'm coming at you.
Right. And what I love about that is, in essence, you're thinking about that other audience, but you're also thinking about yourself and adapting your behavior first and foremost to the benefit of your children. Mm-hmm. And that's my whole pitch today, right? Is the more you know about yourself and you reflect on, you know, doing even better, right? Looking for opportunities to build and, you know, be aware of your self-concept, to look for opportunities to be able to, you know, find that growth. I feel like we're better parents, we're better workers, we're better, you know, friends, like whatever
better
the case.
People out in society.
Yeah. You know?
out there causing less mayhem in the world.
Yeah. I don't promise that.
Yeah, I can't really promise that either. I still have somewhat of a big mouth. Thank you so much for being on.
I will ask one last thing of you. I know we covered a lot of information. What is one thing that's probably you would consider the most important for our listeners to take away? If they're going to take away one thing, what would you want them to take away?
Probably just that being open to growth, maybe, right? Like that even though we see ourselves as having a personality that's a very particular, this is just who I am and this is authentically who I am. Like Kelsey was talking about, I want to be my authentic self. That doesn't mean that we can't continue to do even better. Yeah. That doesn't mean there aren't always opportunities for us to understand how to be authentic and still connect with others or influence others or be able to influence our personal circumstances.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Loretta, thank you very much. I have a feeling this is not going to be the last time you are on Self-Love.
Oh, I would love that.
Love to have you. Thank you for coming. Okay.
Thanks for having me, you guys. It was great. And you made me very comfortable, by the way.
Good. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Self-Love Sit-Downs.
If you like this episode, please leave us a review. In the world of podcasting, the only way to climb the ranks is by receiving feedback via comments and ratings, in return, reaching as many people as possible.
As always, if you love this episode or know someone who would find value in this, share it with a friend and tag us. You can find us on Instagram at Kelsey_Teddy and MondoFarius05. For any additional feedback, you can email us at selflovesitdowns@gmail.com.